time for the March 22, 2024 edition of Weekly Signals Weekly Review. A personal recollection of the last 168 hours of history, broadcasting on World Water Day from the University of California at Irvine on KUCI 88.9 FM. I'm Nathan Callahan.
And I'm Mike Caspar.
And as always, fully hydrated, Mahler, the deep fake news dog. Yeah, Mahler, how you doing today? All right. Well, we'll try to get there. Today we'll be talking about leftover pizza in a refrigerator, Trump the transgressive comic, the anteater insurrectionist, waterfront property, and so much more. But first, from the journal Communications Chemistry. According to a new study which compared the scents of adolescents to those of infants and toddlers, one of the distinct components of teenage body odor is a compound that evokes a warm, woody fragrance. Although there were many similarities between the chemicals wafting from teens and tots, the differences tended to favor the younger children, whose body odor samples had higher levels of a compound with a flowery fragrance. Adolescents, on the other hand, produced a compound that smelled like sweat and urine and had higher levels of substances described as goat-like. I like that.
Yeah.
Mahler agrees.
Yeah.
He's been hanging with the goats.
Yeah.
I know what they mean. I've been around goats.
Yeah.
And I've been around teens.
Yes.
I was a teen.
I was a teen as well.
Yeah. You were. Wow.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, I smell like a goat when I was a teen. I felt like a goat.
Yeah.
From Los Angeles Times, wildlife authorities across the nation have been reporting an increase in human black bear interactions for decades. And this is especially true in California, where urban growth and climate change with severe wildfires and drought has caused a growing number of bears to seek food anywhere they damn please.
Mm-hmm.
Crowded tourist traps like Lake Tahoe and Mammoth Lakes are well known for bear incidents. But rude bears are also being reported along the central coast and in the transverse mountain ranges of Southern California, where they were never seen 50 years ago. At Kern County's Pine Mountain Club, there were 322 bear entries into homes and sheds and 179 vehicle break-ins recorded last year alone.
Wow.
They're busting into cars. Led by a sense of smell 100 times keener than that of humans, the bears have crashed through windows, ripped tiles off roofs, torn solid wooden doors off their hinges to get at leftover pizza in a refrigerator, and defecated on counters, furniture, and floors as a calling card. Who hasn't done that?
I was just going to say that. Yeah. I mean, come on.
The bears have caused hundreds of thousands of dollars in property damage. Last year, a house caught fire after a bear climbed onto the gas stove and turned on the burners. And a few cars were nearly totaled by bears rummaging for crushed cookies between the seats. Now, that's something I've done, too. I've nearly totaled a car doing that.
So you really share a lot in common with bears.
Uh-huh.
And goats. That's what we sort of determined so far today. Okay, keep going. This is getting more interesting by the minute.
Yeah. If you're likely to tear solid wood doors off their hinges, may I recommend a donation to KUCI instead? Just go to KUCI.org. Your generous donation is how we stay on air. Commercial-free, free-form, free speech radio, KUCI. 88.9 FM. You got any big bulky trash laying around, Mike, that you want to get rid of?
Yeah.
You do?
Well, we're in the transition of unloading my dad's house, so yeah.
Well, Orange County residents can haul their bulky items to a free dump day from 8 to 11 a.m. Saturday. That's tomorrow. March 23rd in Irvine. The event includes free shredding. with households limited to four boxes each.
Okay.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
Caltrans will be at the Jeffrey Road Park and Ride Lot just off the 5 freeway, where residents can drive up and dump their stuff. The event does not require an appointment, but get there early because when capacity is reached, the event ends. It starts at 8, runs to 11, but, you know, who knows how long that'll be.
And it's off Jeffrey, you said, at the 5 freeway.
Yeah, it's right off Jeffrey. It's funny, it's on an on-ramp to the 5 freeway. It's not really on the on-ramp, but there's a road that goes to the on-ramp that's really dedicated to that and the park and ride.
Gotcha.
So it's on Walnut, actually.
Yeah.
5595 and a half Walnut Avenue. And it is being paid for by the Clean California Initiative, a $1.2 billion fund aimed at keeping local roads and waterways free of litter. So tomorrow, 8 a.m. to 11 in Irvine on Walnut Avenue.
Hey, that sounds good. Yeah. By the way, Irvine has a couple of very nice facilities for e-waste and those kinds of things. Yeah. They do a good job.
From Scientific American, as populations of pollinators decline, solar panel developers have been seeding the grounds of their solar arrays with native wildflowers. Now, a 5-year study confirms that this approach boosts the pollinators' abundance and diversity with spillover benefits for surrounding farms. Native bees saw the most growth, with their population increasing 20-fold by the study's end.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Monarch butterflies also increased in numbers. Solar panel developers have so far been slow to adopt wildflower planting. Owners of solar fields are concerned about the risks of planting and uncertain about the true costs. But as incentives emerge and research is refined, solar panels and fields of wildflowers will become a common sight.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, they are being creative about what they are planting under these solar arrays. Yes. They're getting better about that. Back in the day when I was in government service, there was a lot of concerns in the desert about desert turtles, the impact it was going to have. There's some things that needed to be worked out and studied, and it sounds like they're beginning to figure it out.
From Ars Technica, giant sequoias are now being planted in the United Kingdom in an effort to help absorb carbon and are becoming a striking and much admired part of the landscape. They've been there for a while, but now they're starting to really boost it up a bit. Giant sequoias absorb and store CO2 faster and in greater quantities than almost any other tree in the world, storing up to 5 times more carbon per hectare than even tropical rainforests. Mm. However, with climate change, Californian giant sequoias are under threat from more frequent and more extreme droughts and wildfires. More than 10% of the remaining California population of around 80,000 wild giant sequoias were killed in a single fire in 2020 alone. Meanwhile, there are an estimated 500,000 sequoias in England. Yeah, they're smaller, but there's 500,000 of them there. And the fastest growing giant sequoias in the UK are growing almost as fast as they do in California. More work is needed to consider the impact of planting non-native species like giant sequoias on native habitats. If the trees are valued as only carbon sticks, the UK will end up with thousands of hectares of monoculture, which isn't good.
No.
But on the other hand, giant sequoias in the UK may be a godsend.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We'll figure that out.
By the way, another great source of carbon capture is soil, the right kind of soil, soil that's been treated, that's healthy. It is a fantastic carbon capture technology.
From the Washington Post, the EPA formally prohibited the import and use of creosote asbestos, the last type of asbestos that U.S. industries use. The ban comes 33 years after a federal judge blocked the agency's initial attempt to ban the cancer-causing mineral. While the use of asbestos has declined since, it remains a significant health threat. Resistance to heat and fire, the mineral's use in the United States, is limited to a small amount of products, including automotive parts, sheet gaskets, and brake blocks for use in the oil industry. Chemical manufacturers have defended its continued use in making chlorine, which is used in pharmaceuticals, pesticides, and to purify drinking water. Asbestos use peaked in the United States in the 1970s when more than 800,000 tons were used annually in manufacturing. In recent years, fewer than 1,000 tons of asbestos fiber have been imported annually. So just bringing it in, and now it's completely banned. About 70 countries have banned creosote asbestos. The United States was one of the few industrialized nations that still allowed it.
By the way, just saw a video literally this week where the former president was at some kind of congressional hearing bitching about how asbestos was being taken away and how important it was, because he's a developer and he doesn't give a damn about anybody else but himself. He was really railing against the banning of asbestos. This was back around.
You're talking about Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter.
That's who I was talking about. Yeah. What an asshole.
What now?
I said, what an asshole.
Who?
Not Jimmy Carter. No. Yes.
Not That's Jimmy. Awful for you to say about that poor man.
Poor man. He's in hospice care, for God's sake.
Homes for people for years. I think we're talking about the yam vegetable that once held office.
The yam.
From New Scientist. By the way, we'll be talking about the yam in just a bit. It's going to be exciting.
Okay.
From New Scientist. As you know, Mike, perfluoroalkyl alcohol and polyfluoroalkyl substances, also known as PFAS, are a class of synthetic chemicals that are used to produce goods like nonstick cookware and waterproof clothing.
Mm-hmm.
The bonds between the carbon and fluorine atoms in PFAS are so strong it can take hundreds of thousands of years to break them down. Many of these chemicals have been linked to harmful health outcomes, including cancer and reproductive and immune problems. Researchers recently found a mismatch between what they detected in actual PFAS products compared to a database of PFAS chemicals that regulatory agencies, including the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, have authorized to use in food packaging. So there's a difference between what they say is going to be there and what is there. About 140 PFAS are used in food packaging, but only 7 of the 68 PFAS chemicals the researchers found in the study were on the list.
Oh, my God.
Only 7 of them. So that means that there were 61 that weren't on this list of chemicals that are in the food packaging. It's unclear how or why these 61 chemicals turned up. They may be new PFASs that were never monitored, or it's possible that unknown impurities emerged during the manufacturing of the authorized chemicals, or that the authorized PFAS degrade over time, creating new chemicals in the process.
Okay, and I'm not a scientist, nor do I claim to be, but I'm willing to bet you that some of this is what they call regulatory capture on the part of industries who want to essentially allow more PFABs into our world because they make money off of them. I don't know that to be a fact, but it's oftentimes when things slip through the grid like this, it's because somebody was deliberately looking the other way when these things were decided.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. It could be they do decompose.
Yeah.
And that may be creating something new. And it might be a combination of all of the above. You know, when you hear the word outrage, what do you think?
Outrage.
Fierce anger?
Yeah. That's what I associate it with, fierce anger.
Shock?
Shock? Not shock so much.
Indignation.
But indignation.
Indignation. Yes. Fox News?
Yes.
Donald Trump?
Yes.
Now, is that his outrage or your outrage?
His outrage. They are an outrage machine. That's what they do.
Well, curiously, the word outrage isn't etymologically related to the words out or rage.
Okay.
It technically does not even contain the words out or rage. In fact, it's not even originally a compound word. Now, the word outrage originally comes from the Latin word altricum, which means excessive. The word ultra in Latin means beyond or extremely, just like in English. Ultra shares a root with the English word other, but not the word out.
That makes sense.
When the Latin word altricum entered Old French, it became outrage. Outrage.
Okay.
And then evolved into outrage. Outrage, outrage.
Yeah.
So outrage isn't out plus rage. It's the French ultra plus the noun-forming ending age, or age, that is in a lot of other Latin French derived nouns like postage,
postage,
and coverage. Outrage then is extremely age. So instead of meaning something that makes you rage, the word outrage literally means the state of being excessive.
Excessive. Okay.
For example, when someone is wearing a wild and colorful outfit, like you are today,
yes,
Mike.
Yes, absolutely. I love my feather boas.
Outside the norm of everyday fashion.
It is. It is. Yes.
It's outrageous.
It's outrageous. Yeah. Now, that I can relate to that usage of the word. You're right. But it has morphed into something meaning anger, just what we were describing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting.
Etymologically speaking, it's not out or rage.
Yeah.
Outrage has nothing to do with it. You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM, Irvine, California. Visit us on the web at kuci.org, on Facebook at facebook.com/KUCI88.9, on our Tumblr blog at kuciradio.tumblr.com, and on Twitter and Instagram at KUCI FM. Speaking of outrageous and extremely, do you think Trump is outrageous?
Yes, I do. He's excessive. Yes.
Do you think he's funny?
No, I think he thinks he's funny. And for some people, he is funny. Low information voters think he's funny. They think he's clever and pithy when he makes stupid remarks that they respond to.
From the New York Review of Books, an opinion piece by Fintan O'Toole called Laugh Riot. Humor may be a way of telling us not to feel sorry for ourselves, but it's also a way of telling us not to feel sorry for others. Like, when it happens to me, it's tragedy. When it happens to you, it's comedy.
Yeah.
Humor can limit compassion to those who are laughing and excludes those who are being laughed at. It makes the polarization of humanity a kind of sick humor.
Exactly.
In analyzing Nazi rallies, German philosophers Theodor Adorno and Mark Horkheimer suggested the rallies were an event to release what was otherwise forbidden, as officially permitted. The crowd's ranting was a kind of organized laughter. It's not hard to see how this sounds like a Trump campaign event with Trump in the role of a transgressive comic. His put-downs are some folks' idea of fun, like you say. For them, he makes anger, fear, and resentment entertaining. The very non-entertaining Ron DeSantis proved that Trumpism without the cruel laughter is nothing. Trumpism needs its creator's fusion of rage, mockery, and poisoned imitation. Hard as it is to understand, especially for those of us who are too terrified to be amused, Trump's ranting is a kind of comedy. But this is not your grandfather's comedy. Trump functions in a culture that's supersaturated with irony. His populist politics exploits the doubleness of comedy the way that only a joke can so easily become no joke, to create a relationship of active connivance between the comic and his audience where everything is permissible because nothing is serious.
Yeah.
Or as Putin would say, nothing is true and everything's possible. It's kind of that thing where it takes away meaning, and yet it gives a different meaning to it.
Yeah.
What is new is that Trump brings all this comic doubleness, the confusion of the real and the performative, of character and caricature, to bear on the authoritarian persona of the strongman savior.
Yeah.
Comic authoritarian politics has some advantages over the old dictatorial style. It allows a threat to democracy to appear, at worst, a tasteless prank. It allows racial insults and brazen lies to be issued in inverted commas. If you don't see those invisible quotation marks, you aren't smart enough, or you are too deeply infected by the woke mind virus to be in on the joke.
Yep.
You're not part of the laughing community.
And and you're an outsider. You're not in the circle. You're outside the circle.
Well, and not only an outsider, but an enemy.
An enemy, exactly. Yeah.
Consider the example of Barry Croft, one of the men tried for his alleged part in a 2020 plot to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, the Democratic governor of Michigan. Croft insisted at his trial in 2022 that he was joking when he posted on Facebook questions like, which governor is going to end up being dragged off and hung for treason first? For those who love Trump, there's something carnivalesque in all of the joking that he does.
Mm-hmm.
They create their own America, their own republic, their own notions of legality, their own church of the leader's cult, their own state versus what they see as the official state. This is where Trump's comedy operates in an arena that admits everyone who gets the joke, from those who fantasize about killing tyrants, decapitating lawyers, and torturing government agents, to those who just like to blow off steam by listening to their heroes say stuff that riles the woke enemy.
Yeah.
In Trump's delivery, there is no shift from mockery to seriousness. No line between entertainment and violence. His sing-song tone serves equally well for vaudeville and vituperation. The voice that we don't like is also the voice that blurs the line.
Yeah.
In a recent interview with Trump, Fox News host Howard Kurtz presented Trump with a not exactly novel theory, that Trump uses over-the-top, sometimes inflammatory language to draw attention. Trump conceded that if you don't use certain words, that maybe that are not very nice words, nothing will happen. Soon thereafter, Trump warned of a bloodbath if he loses in November. Trump's allies claimed he's been taken out of context and unfairly attacked, and it's partly true. In context, Trump was saying that if he wasn't elected and able to place tariffs on China, the U.S. auto industry would tank, and it would be a bloodbath. But here's the deal. Trump is at the very least deliberately playing with fire, and his bloodbath is just the latest example.
Yeah.
In 2016, he said that if he were denied the presidential nomination at the GOP convention, I think you'd have riots. Trump in November 2020 responded to an adverse ruling by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court by saying it would induce violence in the streets. Trump warned last March of potential death and destruction if he were charged by the Manhattan District Attorney. Trump warned in August, after the search of his Mar-a-Lago estate, that terrible things are going to happen. Trump in January warned of bedlam in the country if the criminal charges against him succeeded. And this doesn't even account for the hundreds of times he's alluded to the violence of his supporters. He does that a lot. Sometimes it's direct, sometimes it's veiled, and carries with it the plausible deniability that he craves. But it's perfectly logical to say that the guy who warned of riots, violence in the streets, and death and destruction, if he were wronged, might be gesturing in that direction again, talking about a bloodbath. More than that, history gives weight to comments like these, and that history includes Trump supporters turning violent after the 2020 election, after they heard him say, "If you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore," as encouragement.
That's right.
Did you hear that J6 prison choir thing?
I haven't heard the whole song, but I've heard it.
And it's the national anthem. The whole song, it's the national anthem.
I haven't heard their version of it
in its entirety. The national anthem.
I understand.
Sung
that.
By an all-mayor choir of lawbreakers who treated the Capitol like rude bears tearing off doors and hinges and defecating on desks, with Trump edited in the mix saying, "One nation under God with liberty and justice for all." Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
It's a joke.
Yeah. One part of the January 6th hearing that I don't think got its due in terms of the what if of it all, which is the very famous incident that Cassie Hutchinson laid out, which was that Trump was in one of those SUVs with the Secret Service, and he wanted them to drive him to the Capitol, and they refused. And then there was the whole thing about whether he was trying to choke one of the Secret Service officials or not. What would have happened if he had gotten an SUV up to whatever landing area you could use in front of the Capitol? What was going to happen at that point? Were they, the people that were at the Capitol, how were they going to react when he was there waiting for them to take the Capitol back? To me, that's the manifestation of the things that you just described. He not only has been advocating for violence, he was prepared to be the leader of it in front of the U.S. Capitol in the transition of power from one president to the other.
I don't think he has the guts to do it. I think he thinks all he needs to do is talk about it.
Okay.
I think if he was faced with violence, I think he would run the other way.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wants everyone else to do his dirty deeds for him.
Well, that's, I think, what he was hoping. If he could get to the Capitol and show his face and these people were already in the midst of breaking into the Capitol, I think that would have accomplished what he wanted.
Meanwhile, Joe Biden acknowledged Trump's transgressive comedy with one-liners. At a recent rally, Biden said, "One candidate is too old and unfit to be president. The other is me." But Biden turned serious when he accused Trump of destroying the economy in 2020 and embarrassing the U.S. on the world stage, criticizing Trump for suggesting he let Russian leader Vladimir Putin invade NATO allies. I wish these were jokes, but they're not, Biden said. Biden also took shots at the Republican Party writ large, mocking the House GOP's impeachment effort as a joke and criticizing the party's refusal to pass a bipartisan immigration bill. Republicans would rather fail on impeachment than succeed in anything else, he said. And meanwhile, the impeachment hearings are going absolutely nowhere for the Republicans. They're tanking.
It is. It's actually entertaining. That's entertaining.
Yeah, it's entertaining to watch that because it's great to see someone strip on their dick.
Yeah. Congressman Comer, Jordan, all these clowns are up there spouting and spewing and getting madder by the minute. And then this guy, Lev Parnas, shows up, who was Giuliani's right-hand man for a long time, trying to find dirt on Joe Biden and through the work of Hunter Biden, and just said all of this information came from Russian operatives, all of it. There's nothing in this that is any credible value at all. So that was fun.
From the Associated Press, Trump is expected to enlist Paul Manafort, the former campaign manager he pardoned, as a campaign advisor playing a role in fundraising for the Trump campaign later this year. Manafort worked for Trump in 2016 before being ousted and later convicted of tax and bank fraud felonies as part of Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 elections. Manafort served time in prison before receiving a pardon in the final days of Trump's time in office. Mueller also found that Manafort shared internal Trump campaign polling data with a longtime associate who the FBI assessed had ties to Russian intelligence. A bipartisan Senate committee that investigated Russian interference in the 2016 elections concluded that Manafort's receptivity to Russian outreach was a grave counterintelligence threat that had made the 2016 campaign susceptible to malign Russian influence. And UCI is in the news. From the Orange County Register, Chief Justice John Roberts ruled that Peter Navarro, a trade advisor to Trump during his presidency and a UC Irvine professor, start serving a four-month sentence for contempt of Congress while he pursues an appeal. The order will make Navarro, who refused to comply with a subpoena seeking information about the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol, the first senior aide to Trump to serve time in connection with a plot to overturn the 2020 election. So UCI has its own insurrectionist.
Yes.
In prison right now.
Yes.
The anteater insurrectionist, Zot Zot. From the New Republic, Michelle Morrow won the Republican nomination to become North Carolina's public school superintendent. Uh-oh. Morrow's social media posts reveal a harrowing history of violent beliefs, calling for the executions of several prominent Democrats, including Barack Obama and Joe Biden. In a tweet from May 2020, responding to a QAnon conspiracy theory to ship Obama to Guantanamo Bay, Morrow said, "I prefer a pay-per-view of him in front of a firing squad." In December 2020, after the soon-to-be president said he would sign an executive order to make federal employees comply with Centers for Disease Control guidelines and mask for 100 days, Morrow said, "Never. We need to follow the Constitution's advice and kill all traitors." Morrow has frequently lauded QAnon conspiracies, suggesting in one post that actor Jim Carrey was drinking the blood of children. Policy-wise, Morrow is advocating for an amendment to abolish the State Board of Education. So this is the person that North Carolina Republicans want to run their school system.
Yeah.
And from The Guardian, one more reason why real estate agents are poisonous toads. Jared Kushner praised the very valuable potential of Gaza's waterfront property and suggested Israel should remove civilians while it cleans up the strip. The former property dealer married to Trump's daughter Ivanka was a senior foreign policy advisor under Trump's presidency tasked with preparing a peace plan for the Middle East, and now he sees a real estate opportunity there. From Wired, The U.S. Department of Justice, along with more with a dozen state attorneys general, has filed a lawsuit against Apple that takes aim at the iPhone and Apple's lucrative operating system, claiming that Apple has established an iPhone monopoly. The suit argues that the company's anti-competitive behavior resounds well beyond smartphones to include financial services, fitness, gaming, media, and more as industries affected by Apple's walled garden approach. Apple's Apple Store is a focal point in the suit, a key component of the allegedly competitive moat the company has built around its products. The suit directly seeks to prevent Apple from using its control of app distribution to undermine cross-platform technologies such as super apps and cloud streaming apps, among others, and end Apple's alleged practice of using the terms and conditions of its contracts with developers, accessory makers, consumers, or others to obtain, maintain, and extend or entrench a monopoly.
One of the things that I've been attracted to with Apple is the fact that its operating system and most of its technology has not been the subject of a lot of cyber attacks and bugs and things like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is part of the reason what you just read there, or just if that's because it's a closed system, it benefits me. I'm not in favor of monopolies, but at the same time, is that any kind of a justification for what they do?
I'm sure their lawyers will argue that.
I'm just asking.
I think it could be. We'll find out.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about the insides of an iPhone to be able to tell you what's being hacked in other phones is something that Apple has prevented because it is a closed system. The apps are a way to get in.
Yeah.
Although Apple has used this App Store unfairly sometimes.
No, I agree.
I think there'll be a compromise in this, and I think that'll work out well.
I agree. Do I think that Apple's become kind of the Death Star of the computer world? Yes. But
The Death Star.
Well, I mean, they are the most...
I like my Apple.
I do, too.
I have no complaints about it at all. I understand how people don't like it because of things like this, because it is a closed system, and because, you know, it's a little more expensive, and it helps to buy the whole system instead of like jerry-rigging things together.
I agree.
But at the same time, it works.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it works very well.
Well, Apple has a vertical monopoly in my house.
From the Associated Press, rats have gotten into confiscated cannabis at New Orleans' aging police headquarters, eating evidence as the building is taken over by mold and cockroaches. The rats are eating our marijuana. They're all high, Police Superintendent Ann Kirkpatrick told the New Orleans City Council. And finally, from BBC News, Indonesia's National Transportation Safety Committee reported that when a January 25, 2024 Batik Air flight carrying 153 passengers reached 36,000 feet, the pilot asked his co-pilot to take over while he rested. But the co-pilot also nodded off, and the plane flew itself over 200 miles before the two pilots woke up.
You can subscribe to the Weekly Signals Weekly Review podcast at weeklysignals.com. Weeklysignals.com. Subscribe now.